Talking Tech. My name's Alex Rosenrauch.
And I'm Elliot Liebew. Each Talking Tech episode, we interview legal operations and technology vendors from around the world. We ask them about their product, its use cases and benefits, who their target audience is, and much more. Alex, who are we speaking with today?
Elliot, in this episode, we interview Kevin Clem and Lauren Chung from HBR Consulting, which is one of the world's largest legal ops consulting organizations. You know, I love all of our Talking Tech episodes, but I particularly loved this one because we talked about insights, we talked about the industry, as well as obviously learning more about HBR Consulting. What did you think?
Yeah, I agree. It was a really good episode. I enjoy all of them like you, but this one was really good. Lots of discussion about trends, what we've seen happening in the industry in recent times, but also equally importantly, sort of casting our minds forward and thinking about where things are going. I really enjoyed it. Let's get into it. Kevin Clem and Lauren Chung, welcome to Talking Tech.
Thanks, Elliot. Glad to be here.
Thanks so much.
Now, guys, you're from HBR Consulting. We want to talk about HBR today, find out what you guys do. But just before we get into that, on a personal note, Kevin, what's your role with the organization?
So I am our Chief Commercial Officer. So I oversee our client development and marketing teams. Background historically was on the law department consulting side of the firm and stepped into an enterprise role about 3 years ago to lead kind of our go-to-market efforts for the firm.
Right. Great. And Lauren, how about you?
I lead the strategy and operations practice at HBR. So my role is working on both sides of the fence with law departments as well as law firms on operational transformation initiatives.
Right. All right. So now let's get into HBR itself. And I'm going to let you guys decide who's going to respond to the questions. But I think sort of broadly, we want to hear about what HBR does. And I think we'll probably circle back to some of it in more detail. But tell us broadly what HBR does. And then tell us about sort of scale, size, location, all that kind of stuff. So over to you guys.
Great. I'll take this one. So HBR Consulting is, we'd say, the largest, most comprehensive legal consulting firm that focuses both on strategy, so legal strategy, operations, and technology. So we've grown to about 700 employees. The company was founded as HBR Consulting back in 2011, so coming up just on 11 years as a firm, but traces our roots back to the 70s with both Hildebrandt and Baker Robbins, the HB and the R in HBR, that 30 years in the legal industry. Headquartered in Chicago with people spread around primarily the U.S., but also folks in Canada and the U.K. In terms of client base, we're really excited to have 68 is the latest number of the Fortune 100 law departments that are clients of ours. So a lot of large U.S.-based privately held companies, as well as 92 of the Am Law 100, the 100 largest revenue firms in the U.S. We have also global firms outside the U.S. and global organizations, law departments outside the U.S. as well. But really good concentration as we think about the 200 largest, both law firm, 100 largest law firms, 100 largest law departments. We have 80% of that as clients. So a lot of complex law firms, a lot of complex law departments that are looking for help with, as I said, either strategy around how to run the law department more effectively or more efficiently, or the operational elements of implementing new technology or new processes, and then also the technology side of driving more efficient service delivery to their clients.
Now, you already mentioned this, Kevin, but obviously a consulting organization providing consulting services, but I think you guys also have some sort of specific products as well. Do you want to tell us briefly about some of those?
We do, yeah. We're certainly a consulting firm versus a software company, but where we have seen gaps in the market and really based on client feedback, we have developed a couple of solutions that we think fill in spaces where other technology maybe doesn't fully address the need in the market. So we have a product called Counsel Command, which is our dashboard and data analytics solution. It's really a software-enabled service. So our complements our consulting expertise with technology to provide a single layer, a single visual layer into all of the data that's relevant to running a law department. So visualizing data from your matter and spend management systems, data from your contract management system, data from perhaps IP if you have a patent or trademark system, data from your discovery tools. So kind of all a single pane of glass into all the data you need to run the law department. Again, the idea, it's like your central command center, hence the name Counsel Command. And then we just released late last year a product called Counsel Guide that brings more efficiency and workflow to the process for law firms to both receive and analyze and then comply with the various guidelines that come from their clients. So some of our law firms have said they have hundreds, if not thousands, of different guidelines coming from their clients and have a challenge in trying to ingest, route, review, and then communicate back to the client their understanding of those guidelines and ultimately comply with them as well. So that's a second product that just came to market primarily for our law firm audience, but there's benefits for law departments as well, as they can distribute their billing guidelines electronically through the portal versus just as an attachment to email, and then monitor the firm's receipt and approval of those guidelines going forward. So those are two places where we felt like there wasn't really a great product in the marketplace. And so our consulting teams worked with our product development team to bring some solutions that can address those gaps that we see. And then the final piece, it's not really software as a standalone, but we've enabled a portal to access our annual law department survey results, which we'll talk about more as Lauren picks up the history of our law department survey. But we've taken that data that used to sit in binders on people's desks and brought it into an online dashboard for interactive analysis of historical survey results, and an ability for a law department to compare their own results with others in the industry as well.
Kevin, I think you forgot one of your most important services, which is to throw a really fun party at Vegas for the Clock Institute.
Well, that was certainly a lot of fun. I'm glad you guys were both able to join us. Yeah, we had over 100 people in a suite with the king of rock and roll himself. So not an official offering of HBR, but certainly something that we lean into, that reputation of certainly working hard, but also knowing how to throw a good party as well.
All right, now let's focus in on the law department survey. So I think it's a question for Lauren. Tell us a bit about the survey sort of broadly. What is it? Tell us about its history. Just tell us about the survey sort of broadly.
Absolutely. So the survey has been with HBR for 18 years, and it is really the gold standard in our view for benchmarking data for the in-house legal function. So primarily our audience in terms of those who are leveraging the data are general counsel, legal operations professionals. And what the survey does is capture data across the law department metrics around legal spending, how much a law department spending on outside counsel, in-house legal spending, and then how are they looking at staffing, number of lawyers, number of non-lawyer professionals, looking at leverage models. So a lot of core data elements on how the law department is operating and performing. We also capture a lot of data on management topics such as outside counsel management, as well as technology and the use of technology and trends around how potentially certain technology use may be changing in the near term or in the next 5 years. So a lot of data, again, on some of the core staffing and spending metrics as well as management topics. And then we also have, as part of our law department survey, which I think has been getting more traction recently with the overall talent war that the law departments are facing, is the compensation survey as well. So we provide data on compensation for all members of the legal function, including lawyers, as well as paraprofessionals, legal operations roles. So a lot of rich data on compensation as well. And the survey has been around, again, for 18 years, and we've really had seen it grow over those years. We have about 800 companies that have participated in the survey during that period. And then we're able to really hone in on different industry groups, slice and dice the data with specific peer groups. And as Kevin mentioned, all of that data is reported through an interactive online portal.
And Lauren, I'm curious to understand how this differentiates from some of the other kind of surveys that are in the market, because I know like Clock has them, and there's other kind of other groups that have them, other consulting groups that have them. So you just help us understand kind of how this differentiates in the market.
Sure. That's a great, great question. So one is, I think, the audience. We have primarily Fortune 500 level companies participating, and we have, again, a loyal base of participants who've been in the survey for 18 years. And so I think the data that we're able to bring is the comparison year over year analysis. We have a lot of historical data as well as current data to be able to really show the trends in the market. We're also able to do a lot of customization of the results, which I think is highly valuable. And so what I mean by that is a law department in a particular industry is looking to benchmark against specific peers in their industry, their law department size, their revenue bands. And so our ability to customize the results to give the participants as close to an apples-to-apples comparison, I think, is another key differentiator. And I would say, finally, the depth of the data that we capture. So there are lots of surveys out there, but we, again, capture significant amount more than I think other surveys, because we really go deep. When I say spending and staffing, that's really high level. We do breakout spending by different categories of spend, staffing by different levels. We do a lot more, again, on managing practices that I think a lot of other surveys that are out there don't actually get to that level of granularity. So some of those are some of the, I think, key differentiators for us. And again, one last thing would be the history, right? Being in this, I think we really are the longest standing benchmarking survey in the industry and have a strong following in the industry.
I'll just add one other thing, gents. One of the things that I know you guys take a very keen eye on and keep a close pulse on is the technology in the legal industry. And that's an area that we've the past 7 or 8 years, we've asked questions around, 22 categories of technology in the legal industry that law departments are either implemented or are planning to implement. That's a very common request of our clients is, you know, how do we compare around what tools are other companies implementing? So not only, you know, do they have technology around board management or workflow or AI or document management, the survey also asks, if you have a technology, which system are you using? How satisfied are you? So there's actually satisfaction ratings of each technology solution across the current customer base. And then also, what are your upcoming plans? So even if you have let's say a particular software solution installed, but in the next year you're planning to move to a different solution, we actually capture that as well. So the depth of detail around technology, both what do people have, what are they, how satisfied are they with those solutions, and are they planning to make a switch? Are they planning to upgrade the current technology they have, or no significant change? I think that's one incremental piece of information that we really don't see elsewhere in the market. You've got the Gartners of the world, the Forrester ratings of the world, but that tends to be around a specific area of technology. Ours spans all 22 different categories of technology. So I think that, again, it's a differentiator because we've got multiple years of that. We can see the trends up and down, different, you know, comings and goings of different product and solutions, and also some that are emerging that are just newer, you know, perhaps not widely adopted, but many companies are exploring their potential use as well.
So, tell us about some of the trends we've seen over the last, well, whatever time horizon you would like. So what are some of those trends, both tech and otherwise, that you think sort of, you know, you can draw out from the survey over all these years?
And I'll just add to that as well, Elliot. Like, I'm interested to understand from your perspective what the trends are, but I'm also keen to understand, like, what are customers wanting to know? Like, what is the trend from the other side? So yeah, throw it over to you guys.
Absolutely. Let me start and then I will ask Kevin to chime in as well. So, I'm going to start with some of the core elements, right? What are our law departments seeking to understand? Primarily, it is going to be around spending and staffing. And so it's been super interesting to see how spending trends have been evolving over the past several years. And I guess in the most recent data, we saw that spending levels kind of grew at a modest rate. So, you know, total legal spending did increase, but at modest rates. We're talking like 2% compared to the prior year. But what's interesting is if you look at kind of where law department spending trends are changing, it's in two dimensions. One is on the inside legal spending. The rate of increase in inside legal spending has grown. And then the other dimension is on other service providers. And so if you look at kind of the three elements of legal spending, you've got inside spending, outside counsel spending, and then spending on other service providers. And so we're tracking as a trend, well, how significant has the change been across some of these other spending categories? And outside counsel spending has been relatively flat, which has been interesting. And it's not because legal demand is down, but there's been a more of a deliberate effort by law departments to think about how they potentially pivot in some respects the use of in-house legal teams differently or more effectively, and then obviously partnering with other service providers. And that's really the alternative legal service providers in the industry. And so that is something that we've been tracking, and it's been definitely interesting to see how those numbers have been increasing. And then on the staffing side, which I think nicely support what I just discussed on the spending dimension, is in-house legal staff. I mean, even during COVID, we did not see legal departments cutting staff significantly. It was more law departments actually looking to grow their teams. And so over the past several years, we've definitely seen the number of in-house legal staff or lawyers per $1 billion of revenue, which is a key metric, growing year over year. And so the focus is, how do we really shift service delivery in terms of using internal resources, potentially growing those resources, thinking about optimizing those resources, and then really partnering not just with outside counsel, but these other alternative legal service providers to provide legal services more effectively. So that's just, again, one trend that's been very interesting. And we're going to be talking about technology shortly. But when we think about resource optimization and the internal staff, a lot of that building of internal capabilities is going to be a key theme and a trend that we're seeing. And technology is a key supporter and enabler of that internal capability creation. So it's just interesting to see these dimensions kind of come together as law departments are really thinking about and challenging themselves to say, how do we fundamentally change the way we work, future of work, that has to be more agile, that has to be relying on not just outside counsel and in-house counsel, but looking at the broader legal ecosystem for support.
And Lauren, have you found the Goldilocks zone? Like, as in, you're talking about the mix there between internal resources, external resource, and it's in potentially other services. Like, based on the data that you've collected over, I think you said the last 18 years or so, like, have you found that Goldilocks zone?
You know, I would have to say we are, I think there isn't one golden.
You're going to say it depends, aren't you?
It does depend. And I hate to give that answer, but it is true, because I think what we like to say to law departments is, you know, you have philosophically have to align, right? What is your ultimate service delivery model going to be? And we do recommend in many instances, you know, you have to look at this holistically. It's not just about inside legal spending. It's not about outside. It really has to be a balanced approach. We are seeing more law departments leaning more towards inside. Historically, for so many years in the survey, it was always 40-60, 40 inside, 60 outside. When I say that, I'm talking about total legal spending, how the distribution of spending. Now it's more 50-50, and moving a little bit more towards the inside. And I think that's, we've seen a healthy result coming out of that, right? So while I can't give you a protect, you know, what is the golden number and the balance, I think it is, we are seeing a shift, and we're seeing, I think, good results coming from that shift, meaning law departments really investing internally to be able to grow capability and service their business and clients more effectively.
But there's an element of having more of an intentional strategic direction around what your mix is, right? So for many years, law departments, it was just a matter of knowing, okay, well, what is our mix of internal versus external spend, and how does that compare with peers? And just knowing what it was helpful. Now I think it's getting to a point where they're saying, all right, we know what it is, but is that what we expect it to be? Or is this an intentional focus? Some law departments will have 80% of their legal spend with outside counsel and only 20% internally. And they'll say, well, that's an intentional focus because we want to rely heavily on outside counsel, keep our internal teams lean. Others will say we want to bring as much in-house as we can. But again, just making sure that the numbers themselves are not looked at in isolation, but really in the context of an overall strategy of what do we want our service delivery model to the corporation to be, and letting the data inform and drive that, as opposed to just letting it be, you know, another data point. It should really align with the strategy of why are we trying to staff or spend the way we are, and let that data support a strategic direction.
And I would like to just focus on that statistic that you mentioned earlier, Lauren, where you were saying that previously, I'm not sure what the time horizon there is, we would have had 40% roughly on inside counsel, 6% outside. And now what you're seeing broadly is closer to 50-50. That feels to me like a seismic shift in the mixing ratio within the legal industry. That is a huge change.
Yes,
there.
It is.
Do you have any feeling for what is driving that change?
Yeah. I think a couple of things. One is obviously the cost of external counsel and external just overall cost pressures that law departments are facing. I think has been, we talk about cost control as being a key priority for law departments for years. And we're seeing law departments saying, you know, one of the best ways to be able to manage costs more effectively is to decrease potentially the reliance on outside counsel. And so there has been, as you know, through a lot of effort, through conversions projects and through, you know, again, thoughtful ways of how do we engage outside counsel, going back to what Kevin was alluding to, this whole idea of being really strategic and when do you use outside counsel, when do you use in-house counsel, what are those roles? I think law departments have done a good job over the recent years and better aligning when they use outside counsel and for what. I think it's also because the cost pressure absolutely is absolutely critical to, again, why we're seeing some of this shift happening. We're also seeing law departments saying, you know, as we think about the value of the in-house legal function, it is their ability to best align with their clients and be close to the changes in the business, the needs of the business. And outside counsel has a role in that, but they're obviously going to be not as closely aligned with any business. It's just the nature of their role is different. And so, again, intentional focus and saying we need to bring in more capability to better serve the client, to be that strategic business partner. And so the role of the in-house counsel has also been evolving into those roles. And so the need for those roles has also increased as well. So, you know, we're seeing, again, there's the cost dimension, but more than just the cost, it's about how do we better deliver legal services? And we're saying, you know what, actually the make has great results and outcome that aligns with what the business goals are. So there is, again, that dimension coming into play as well.
All right. Now, you touched on it earlier, this war on talent and this need to have an intentional focus on talent management. And I think it relates to what we've been discussing here. So tell me what you mean by war on talent and tell me what you've seen from a trends perspective in relation to this talent management idea.
So it's been interesting. I think this is not just even the legal industry. It's impacting industries across, right? Across industry perspective on the talent challenge. There is a real desire for, I think, people now more than ever to look at work differently and kind of the demands of what they're looking for from that work-life balance perspective. We're seeing people moving from organization to organization, and law departments are facing challenges on retention. And so, you know, what we've seen law department leadership do is be much more strategic in looking at talent development and growth holistically and recognizing that we can't just leave it to HR. I think HR has its role in talent competency frameworks and career pathing, but, you know, they are seeing that there's some legal specific nuances to those things that have to come forward. And so to be able to keep people engaged, people want to know, what is my path in an organization? How can I progress? What are those opportunities that that will help me to grow as an individual? And then how do I then balance work with personal life? And what does that look like? And then the remote working environment, how does that help support operate in this kind of a new norm? So all of those different dimensions are coming into play. And law department leaders who've been really forward thinking and prioritizing this have said, you know what, we're going to invest in making sure we have legal specific competencies, that we are defining career paths beyond just kind of the traditional management role to say everyone needs to kind of work through a management track, but saying we want to recognize individuals who are subject matter experts and potentially create a separate path for them. Also consider potential paths that are pivoting into business roles. And so this idea of creating opportunity for the in-house lawyer, I think, has really come forward in new ways because people are looking for new experiences. People are looking for growth. They want to progress. There's title elements to it, but it's much more about the experience, opportunity to grow. And I think some of those legal specific nuanced efforts that we've seen happening more recently in the market, I think, has played an important role. The other piece is, you know, the benchmarking, right? Compensation. Compensation is an important dimension to all of this as well. And we're seeing law departments saying, you know, we need to be more competitive. We need to benchmark. We need data to make sure that we're compensating our people competitively and looking at this holistically, right? It's not just about the competencies. It's about development. It's about rewards. All of those have to come together in a much more strategic perspective around talent development and management. So it's been great to see law department leaders kind of stepping into thinking on prioritizing some of these elements in this war for talent.
And so while we're focused on people and talent, I'm interested to get your thoughts on diversity and inclusion. It's one thing that we've seen become a real focus, particularly out of the US. We had a long conversation with Mike Haven, who's the Clock president, about this very issue. So to what extent are you seeing a focus on that issue in your law department clients, and what is being done about that?
Yeah. You know, we've had some really interesting data on the survey that the law department survey that we referenced earlier on in-house diversity statistics. So, you know, we've been tracking that internally. It's been great to actually see among lawyers growth, right? So, for example, from 2019 to 2021, we've seen ethnically diverse lawyers in the in-house legal function move from 19% to 22%. We've seen with number of women as lawyers in the in-house legal department move from 44% to 52%. So again, we are seeing movement there. And I see law departments looking at diversity from two lenses. One is the makeup of the internal legal function in itself. So some of the statistics I just shared are talking about how they've been growing diversity within their internal legal teams. But the other dimension is how are they driving diversity among outside counsel and the providers and the preferred providers or other partners that they are working with in the legal ecosystem. And that has been a growing focus. We've heard a lot about what law departments are doing, some being much more focused and prioritizing, but we're seeing a growing desire to incorporate, for example, diversity information in how firms are being selected, saying law firms, you need to be accountable for bringing diverse timekeepers on our matters, and we need you to make sure that you're adhering to our values as an organization. And we're asking, and they're trying to make this a data-driven process, which is great to see. So it's not just, you know, we're committing to some of these values and requirements, but law departments are saying, we're going to track this. You know, we're going to require you on an annual basis to provide timekeeper diversity there. You need to submit that. We need you to show how you are bringing different diverse timekeepers into our matters. And so it's just been interesting to see that journey that law departments have been undergoing internally in growing diversity within, but also creating much more accountability among their outside counsel to drive diversity in their teams as well.
And thanks for that, Lauren. And yeah, I can hear that they're trying to drive a behavior through measuring some of those aspects that you're talking about. But do you see them, and I'm talking about law firms here, talking about in-house counsel here, do you see them having kind of KPIs or quotas both on their law firms in terms of staffing and those kind of things, but then also internal quotas or internal KPIs around diversity?
So I would say law departments are doing better on the internal quotas, meaning having more of a focus internally on growing diversity. So I think there has been a growing focus there. I think there's been more done on the outside counsel front, I would have to say. But I think there is recognition that it has to be both sides. It's not just creating accountability for outside counsel, but not necessarily reflecting that internally. I think they know that both of these dimensions have to be balanced. But we're definitely seeing, obviously, on the outside counsel front, KPIs. There's, you know, dashboards, diversity dashboards that track, right, on a matter level, how diverse timekeepers are playing and then the roles that they're playing. So ton of data that's being captured now more than ever on DEI for the outside counsel. I think law department, the internal piece is starting to catch up, is what I would say.
Hey, Alex, I have a couple of thoughts there. One, we've seen some of our clients within the law department say, we need to reflect the same diversity within the law department as the rest of the company. So using the company metrics as a metric against which to measure the law department itself is one thing we've seen where they're trying to ensure that they're as diverse or more diverse than the rest of the company as a whole. Another one, we've seen companies saying we want to be as diverse or comparable to our customer base as well. So looking at, you know, who are our customers outside of the company that we could try to match or align with. And then on the law firm side, while there are some law departments, in fact, Mike's company at Intel put out the Intel rule that had, you know, specific quota around the level of diversity they were looking for with their law firms, we also recognize that law firms can't just flip the numbers on a dime, right? This is not an easy number just to shift overnight. So what we often will see is an ability for a firm to show that they're making progress there. So what was it last year? What were their diverse statistics? What were their KPIs a year ago? And what are they today? And what they anticipate it being a year from now? With the recognition that, again, it's a process, right? You need to recruit, you need to develop, you need to retain diverse talent, and that can't be done overnight. And it is, but showing a trend towards progress there relative to where you started, I think is something that, you know, as opposed to absolute numbers across the board, being able to demonstrate that this is an important priority for us as a law department or for us as a law firm, and showing progress year over year on those dimensions. As Lauren alluded to, from 2019 to 2021, we saw that numbers across law departments change in the industry overall. But being having a law firm be able to say this is what where we were on our numbers, and here's the progress we've made. Here's the specific initiatives that we've put in place, and showing the results of that as well. Because we know even at HBR we're on our own diversity journey. Lauren, the champion of our DEI efforts internally, and we've made great strides at HBR. But it's been a journey. It's not a simple, you know, just flip a switch type process. It takes time to think about where you're recruiting from, the types of schools in our case that we were going and recruiting campus hires from, the dimensions around promotion and development and retention. So this is a process, and I do think that while metrics are important to track and monitor and see how you're doing, it's also a matter of seeing how progress is being made over time.
All right, so now let's circle back to tech. You touched on this earlier, Kevin, that you've got a bunch of sort of touch points around technology, and I want to hear about that. So what have you seen over, you know, the last few years since you've been collecting that data?
Yeah, a couple of things. So, and actually dovetailing quite nicely with the diversity piece, just the ability to track more information and have the data at your fingertips. There are some tools that we've seen essentially reach almost table stakes levels within law departments. So things like an e-billing solution, the data shows that 86% of law departments in our survey have implemented e-billing. Matter management's at 80%. E-signature, which was actually a quite low number several years ago, was about 40%. Now it's north of 80%, having law departments with electronic signature in place. And certainly the pandemic accelerated those that maybe hadn't gone to an e-signature program, getting that in place. Low requirement to get that stood up, and a high return on that investment. And then kind of beyond matter management, e-billing, document management starting to become, again, hitting that 80% threshold of law departments having implemented those solutions. So kind of what often is referred to as ELM, or enterprise legal management, right? Your billing, your matter management, your document management, as those kind of core tools. Other ubiquitous solutions around, you know, board management, if it's a publicly traded company, having tools for managing the board, entity management, those kind of core elements of legal technology we've seen reach a pretty wide level of adoption. And in some cases, companies are coming back around and saying, all right, well, we've had matter management for 5 or 10 years. We've had e-billing for a long time. We've perhaps even had two different systems for that. Might we consider consolidating those into a single solution that does both e-billing and matter management if we've had two separate solutions? Or are there some emerging players that we might consider looking at to revisit the solution that we've had for a long time? So it's been pretty steady in terms of adoption percentages in those core areas, but we are seeing some companies, in fact, we just are starting a new client project with a large tech company that's been on a platform for 10 plus years, and now they're moving to a totally different matter management and e-billing solution as they think to align with the future. So that's one kind of category of widely adopted technology. The next category we talk about is kind of what are companies exploring or getting ready to implement? And while there's still a high level of adoption of contract lifecycle management, or CLM, there's still a lot of companies that are either implementing that for the first time or planning to make a change or a move. Perhaps they had done contract lifecycle management for the buy side, the vendor procurement side of the company, but they hadn't yet done it for the sell side, or the kind of the sales side of the contracting that tends to involve, you know, the marketing or sales teams. And so either implementing that for the first time or recovering from a prior failed contract lifecycle management implementation. There are many tales of woe of those gone awry. Or even if you do have one, thinking about, could we drive greater adoption or perhaps refresh or renew our CLM implementation? So again, not new technology in the sense that it's been around for a long time, but a renewed focus of many leading law departments around CLM. And as we both experienced at the Clock Institute, a lot of companies in the CLM space, whether it's, you know, end-to-end CLM or contract analytics or components of that, you know, specific point solutions around the contracting lifecycle. So again, an area of a lot of focus there. Another one that's relatively new that we're seeing an emphasis on is what we call legal service request, or kind of the demand management technology, really capturing in more detail where legal demand is coming from. So, you know, it's pretty straightforward. When you get a lawsuit served, there's a summons and complaint that lands. Someone fills that in on the matter management system, and even transactional work, right? Typically, when an M&A activity is coming up or a patent's being filed, it's relatively easy to recognize and capture that demand because it's, you know, it's pretty pretty understood what the work is. The other element, though, around advice and counsel and things that maybe were just a phone call or a quick email that came in from a client that's not specifically a dispute or lawsuit, nor is it a transaction, but kind of this advice work, it's difficult to really quantify that. And so this notion of a legal service request solution as a way of intaking requests for legal support that may be just a very simple form, but at least identifies who the request is coming from, what's the topic, what the status of that conversation is, and perhaps if there was advice given, what the advice was, so that you have the benefit of looking back and saying, okay, we've had 15 questions in the last month from different parts of the business on the same topic. Perhaps we can turn that into an FAQ, or we could automate that through a chatbot. And instead of having to call a legal and ask that question, we could have an AI solution actually drive those frequently asked questions through more automation. So kind of the Alexa for legal of sorts, if you want to think of it that way, or the Google Home for legal, not to be picking a particular automation technology. But that's one is the legal service request. So you have a really good sense of what the demand for legal services is, not just disputes, not just transactions, but also that advice. And then the final one on the emerging area is just the workflow tech itself. So connecting the steps once the legal service request has been received, kind of going through the workflow process. So, you know, with contracting, there's obviously some workflow elements of contracting, different types of requests that come in for legal support, taking them through a flow from one person to the next, whether that's, you know, within legal, going from a senior attorney to a more junior attorney or to a paralegal, the steps along the way, or there's approvals that need to be gathered and gleaned. So having different types of technology to address the workflow solutions is another area that we're seeing a lot of investment and focus, given, if you can streamline what is otherwise a more manual or, you know, email-driven process into something that can be more automated through technology, there's a lot of efficiencies to be gained. And going back to the comments Lauren made earlier about the shift of internal versus outside resources, I think a part of the ability to grow an internal team is capacity creation by using workflow tools to reduce the amount of churn that it takes to get work done. And so you have less instances of outside counsel being engaged because of capacity constraints. That really is more shifting outside counsel focus when you're hiring outside counsel to expertise that fills a gap that they don't have internally versus an overflow valve where the team was just so busy because of inefficient processes that they had to call outside counsel because they were too strapped. So kind of tying those all together, contract management, legal service request, and workflow being three areas of growth. And then finally, something that we, HBR specifically, is leaning into is the data analytics trend. And I talked about it briefly before, but we have a product called Counsel Command that it's starting to visualize data from various source systems. There are great reporting solutions available on the market, but one of the things that we see as a bit of a gap is the ability to connect the multiple point solutions in a tech stack into a single view so you can go into one place and track what's going on with your litigation, but also track what's going on with your IP and track what's going on with your cycle times for your contracts. Rather than having to stand up three independent dashboards across those different solutions, being able to stitch them together and give them a single view into a repository of data and be able to communicate back to the business. You know, what is the demand that we're having for legal and why are we deploying the resources we have? How much are we spending with the different kinds of firms and what's been the trend there? What's the staffing mix of outside counsel? How are they doing relative to diversity? All those things we've talked about as trends in terms of the data play, seeing an uptick in law departments saying we need to really get some value out of the tech investments we've made. And one way they can get value is by having good visuals and interactive dashboards to pull data out and get that return on that tech investment they've made over the years. That's kind of the biggest, boulders in the jar, so to speak, the biggest pieces of the tech trend that we're seeing.
I feel like we could do a full episode on each of those boulders that you were just talking about. But I want to drill into just want to drill into one, and that is kind of matter management, because the number that you threw out there, which was kind of, you know, most, I think 80% of teams have a form of matter management. I'm keen just to deconstruct that a little bit, because that 80% number feels quite high for me. So can you help me understand, is that law firms and in-house? Is that just in-house? But also define what matter management means.
Sure, absolutely. No, this is from the law department survey. So this is just in-house teams. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. Back, you know, probably 15 years ago, there were matter management systems, which were essentially just project management tools for legal. So being able to capture, you know, in the case of litigation, the plaintiff, the defendant, the outside counsel that was engaged, the status of that, who's working on what, the key dates, the activities that are taking place on the matter. So just kind of a project management tool to manage the legal matter. And there was separately some tools around billing. And so you might have a tool that was specifically there just to enable the receipt, routing, review, and approval of bills. And those are starting to come together in a single solution now. So while we still ask the question of e-billing solutions and matter management independently, most tools today are doing both of those things. They're both capturing the work that's being performed, who's working on it, any third parties involved with kind of a contact list, the narratives associated with activity, perhaps even the documents that are associated with that. So that's the matter management piece. And then the e-billing is obviously the bills associated with the work that's being sent to outside counsel. But matter management can and should be used not just for matters that require outside counsel, but for any work that the law department is doing, even if it's work being done internally. So just a clear sense of who's working on what, what's the activity, what's the different, again, notes, statuses, updates, dates that are coming up, milestones, key deliverables, all of that centrally managed as the kind of the project management tool for legal is what we deem matter management.
Mm. And just last question on that then. So are people implementing or have systems that kind of do all those capabilities that you're talking about? Like, is it a system that they can literally buy off the shelf and have those? Or is it something that they've built like through some of their existing technology to do some parts and then another tool to do some parts and another tool to do some parts?
So the notion of enterprise legal management, which really we summarize as kind of matter and spend management, those are off-the-shelf products. They're leading providers. A lot of the top sponsors at Clock and ACC mm-hmm. are those companies that have those matter management systems. Now, that said, a lot of those enterprise legal management tools, as they're deemed, will have flavors of document management involved, or they might have a legal hold module, or they might have some light tracking of other, you know, the activities of a board, but they're not going to be detailed like a legal hold tool might be that's truly focused on legal hold as part of any discovery process. They're not going to be the full feature set that a true document management solution like law firms would use in private practice would have. So there is this kind of tension between providing an enterprise legal management or matter management and matter and spend solution that tries to do enough that you can buy a single solution with the reality that there really doesn't exist a tool that is best in class across all those different dimensions of what, you know, could go into the full life cycle of a matter. And so we still have a lot of our clients that are looking at point solutions for elements where they really want to have best-in-class features for legal hold, let's say, or they want to have a best-in-class solution for document management. And there's a recognition that, you know, a document management system doesn't really do full matter management. It doesn't do e-billing in the same way that a matter management system doesn't typically do the full needs of document management with robust version control and automation of workflows and things of that nature that a true DM system can do. So there's a lot of movement in that space in terms of, you know, how wide are platform players trying to go and how much are they trying to cover? And then how narrow are specific point solutions? You know, how important is very detailed features of a point solution relative to I can settle for, you know, 80% of my features if I can do it in a single solution? That is a continuous continuum that we've seen over the past several years back and forth between enterprise solutions and then more point solutions. And I don't think there's a single answer there. It really is dependent on how sophisticated the needs are within a given law department for those specific point solution features.
Yeah. Now, we've focused a lot on trends that we've seen over recent years, but what you, let's extrapolate that into the future. Where do we think, what do we think are those sort of big rocks that we're going to see continue to be focused on, or new developments over the next few years? It might be tech, might be continued focus on diversity. What do we think? What's going to happen over the next few years into the future?
Well, one thing I'll just jump in there, and Lauren, feel free to chime in as well from your perspective. But one thing that I do think is interesting is, and we're already seeing this, is we've reached a point in the legal ops industry where there's less of a need to try to make the case for legal ops. I think there's with, obviously groups like Clock growing to thousands of members globally, not just in the US, but across the world, the recognition that legal operations leaders can, in fact, really demonstrate a lot of value back to the business through better capture of data and better informed decision-making around selection of technology and better budget management, things of that nature. I think we've already reached the high watermark of recognition of the value of legal ops. At the same time, we've also seen that people who joined legal ops in that first wave, some of those people have been in that space for 5, 10, 15 years, and they're getting to a point where they're wanting to try something new or try something different. And so you've seen some very seasoned legal ops leaders moving over into tech companies. And there's obviously some well-known celebrities, so to speak, in the legal ops world who are now moved over and out of legal ops into tech providers to try something new. So I do think that there's a bit of a 2.0 for legal ops coming, where the teams that were needed to build a foundational set of legal ops capabilities have probably been in that seat for quite some time and are thinking about, what's my next opportunity, or how could I recalibrate my team so that we're still doing exciting strategic work. The analogy we often use is, the rocket fuel that it takes to launch something, to get that legal ops function off the runway and up to comfortable cruising altitude, is very different than what it's required to maintain. So we do see a trend coming in the future that for departments that have established legal ops functions, there's going to continue to be a shift in the types of resources that are fulfilling those roles, and perhaps even a reconsideration of what if this legal ops function needs to remain full-time headcount internally. Do we need a 50-person legal ops team now that we're pretty much in maintain this the altitude that we've hit, or could we think differently about resources there? So one of the things that we're pretty excited about at HBR is this notion of a legal operations managed service offering, where either for law departments that are large enough to recognize the need for legal ops, but perhaps not large enough to go and hire full-time resources, and certainly some of those in more remote locations outside of the major metropolitan cities, recognizing that they don't necessarily want to have to relocate teams and pay for people to come and be physically present, to have an outsourced provider be able to provide some legal operations expertise at scale without having to invest in internal resources if you don't yet have legal ops at all. And then the other side of the spectrum, if you have a large legal ops team, perhaps there are components of that work that is not necessarily the most strategic parts that are critical to that and core to the business that a third party like HBR could do at scale. So things that are repetitive tasks, reporting, analytics, reviewing certain activities on an ongoing basis. We feel like there will be a shift towards thinking about, could third parties take on parts of both law firms and law department operational functions that provides more flexibility for scaling up and scaling back resources as needed versus having a lot of carrying costs of full-time heads internally. So to be clear, we're not coming to get anybody's jobs, but as there is an interest in shifting towards more strategic work and thinking about third parties to take over things like managing application stacks that are legal specific or managing an ongoing outside counsel relationship, but done at scale, I do think that there's going to be more emphasis on rethinking what is the role, the strategic role that legal ops can play in the future, and really shifting less from the tactical and implementation focus that perhaps has been wave one of legal ops, and continue to focus on the real strategic elements that really do require an internal resource to focus on. Lauren, anything that you wanted to add in terms of trends or things that you're seeing on the horizon line?
No, I think those are really some key trends, but I do think it's you know, we're going to see more and more law departments, I think, challenging the status quo and continuing to look to partner with the broader legal ecosystem in new ways. And so I think that is, you know, this concept of how do we not always try to, in some respects, you know, the make versus buy, right? You are trying to make the delivery of legal services more potentially focused internally. But I also see law departments saying, you know, again, to Kevin's point, some other of these adjacent roles or needs could be serviced differently as well. As we talk about resource optimization, in some respects, it is more effective to get specialized experts providing support, particularly in the operations area, versus necessarily trying to build within. So I think it's going to be a combination of those things. We'll continue to see those evolve. And I think we'll see ultimately that law departments are what I love about kind of the upcoming trends, and what we continue to see is law departments are continuing to challenge and wanting to look at and reevaluate. And it's this constant progression of continuous improvement, I think, is going to be kind of key ultimately to what we'll see in the years to come.
Now, I think each of the topics we've touched on throughout this conversation could be its own episode unto itself. These are very interesting points. We do need to wrap it up. Now, I want to thank you both for your time and also ask where should people go to find out more about either the two of you or HBR more generally? What's the best source there?
Well, I'll start. I think just our HBR website, we try to keep that current, just hbrconsulting.com would be one. We've got a lot of our insights that we post there on our insights page, different white papers we produce. We have an events page there that shares a lot of the different sessions that we conduct with virtual sounding boards for bringing people together. So if you like some of the perspectives or insights, certainly check out our webpage. Lauren and I are both listed there on the Teams page within the HBR website. Additionally, you can go if you want more information about any of the products we've talked about. There's a products page there, but also just councilcommand.com or councilguide.com are the two products we alluded to there. You can find those online. And we're avid engagers on LinkedIn as well. So find us there. Happy to get connected and get you invited into different communities that we have, both in person, as we're getting back to in-person meetings, as well as virtual through various virtual forums as well.
All right. Well, Kevin, thank you for your time. And Lauren, thank you again for yours.
Thanks, Elliot. Thanks, Alex. Great to connect with you guys again.
Thank you so much for having us.